Hey guys, it's Rob. You may not know this about me, but I suffer from both severe depression and high anxiety. I've tried several different ways to treat these things that sometimes just run my life. I've isolated, medicated, therapied, and they all help to a degree. But I found a treatment that, if used responsibly, can be effective in my day-to-day life. Some days require only one dose, and then there are days that I have to self-care several times a day. Fuck it all. The newest emotional stabilizer that's not a pill or even a suppository, but it is orally consumed. Boss piss you off? Fuck it all. Spouse being a dumbass? Fuck it all. Unexpected bill hits your checking account? Fuck it all. Life has been getting consistently harder and harder for everyone over the last several years, with inflated gas and grocery prices, housing shortages, so on and so on. And if you're like most Americans, myself included, you've tried self-medicate either with alcohol and or drugs just to help change your frame of mind. But I have the answer right here, right now. Just fuck it all. Dr. Dean Goldberry, doctor and research scientist into human emotion behavior and the inventor of the newest and greatest mood-enhancing treatments around, fuck it all. Trust me, fuck it all has started to really change my life, and it may do the same for you. Fuck it all. This product has not yet been approved by the FDA.
Due to the extreme nature of this program, listener discretion is advised. The subject matters may include topics of substance usage, sex, historical events that may be sensitive to some listeners, and foul language. Things discussed may not be considered politically correct in this overly sensitive environment. They may not be appropriate for listeners under the age of 13. As well as some listeners may find things offensive no matter the age, again, listener discretion is advised.
Greetings and salutations, and welcome to GXO, another episode of Generation Extraordinary, the podcast nobody asked for, focusing on everything pop culture from the greatest generation ever, Generation X. So if it happened between 1960 and 1999, we're going to discuss it, like movies, music, TV, and even a bit of history from that year. Who knows? You may just learn something before it's done. And if you're lucky, this old man may just regale you with a story or two from his own life and experiences. I'm Robert Pop, your host, coming to you from beautiful Podunk, Nebraska.
Hey kids, it's your Uncle Blanky. As you know about our newest location out at the Amsterdam Family Fun Center on Highway 4. So come on out and check out some of our newest toys. The work from home play set, including crying baby, barking dog, video call koozies to disguise your beverage of choice. Remember, Halloween is just around the corner, so come on in for some of the best realistic costumes, like third-time divorced for men and women, the transorbital lobotomy patient complete with drool bib, and the absent father costume complete with child support court order, blank bus ticket, and a pack of cigarettes. And before you leave, stop in our health and beauty aisle for the men's 13-in-1 shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, mouthwash, shaving cream, deodorant, potted meat product, hemorrhoid cream, hand sanitizer, car wash, laundry detergent, and dish soap. Blinkies is rated PG-13, located at the S&M Family Fun Center on Highway 4, across the street from Knobs and Knockers and Dick's Liquor.
Welcome to Boris's Weird, Strange, and Unusual Finds. Located in the S&M Family Fun Center on Highway 4. If you're looking for a gift for a friend, or even yourself, that's just fucking odd, come on in. We have a wide range of silver items for dispensing with that pesky werewolf. Bullets, knives, and arrows. Not to mention a fresh supply of wolfsbane. Baby, you're looking to do away with a vampire. We have the vampire defense kit, complete with holy water, crucifix, and wooden stakes. Right now, until the winter solstice, We are having a huge sale on all our possessed dolls. Chucky, Annabelle, and Robert seem to be our biggest sellers. Come and see me, Boris, at Boris's Weird, Strange, and Unusual Finds, located in the S&M Family Fun Center on Highway 4. Open from sundown to sunrise, 6 days a week.
The views and opinions expressed are just that, Rob's views and opinions. He is not always politically correct, and they may not match up with your own opinions. It is not his intentions to offend anyone. Hopefully you find the shows entertaining and informative as well. Please note, Rob is not a professional historian, but he has done a lot of research for this show. With that being said, mistakes happen, but he will do his best to minimize those. Keep in mind, Rob is just some nut with a microphone.
Greetings and salutations, and welcome to this week's episode of GXO, Generation Extraordinary, the podcast nobody asked for. This week, I promised you, we're going to continue some really weird and creepy shit. I'm going to be discussing, after our break, the paranormal creatures. But first, I want to tell you about some of the monsters of the Midwest. Now, it may not be what you think. You know, living kind of rural and smack dab in the middle of the good old USA, we tend to have a false sense of security. We tend to think that the really bad things happen in cities like New York, Los Angeles, Miami, St. Louis, Denver, and we can't forget Kansas City. But even here in Podunk, Nebraska, we are not immune to the monsters or the terrible things that one human will do to another. So at the time of this recording, and today is October 10th, according to the website uncovered.com, there are a total of 273 cold cases here in Nebraska. And for my listeners that are abroad, or I'm not focusing specifically on Nebraska because that's where most of my listeners are. I'm focusing on it because that's where I'm from. And so thank you for bearing with me. And at the very least, you're going to learn something about Nebraska, United States of America. So there you go. The oldest cold case here in Nebraska is a missing man by the name of Joe Miller. And he was from Cedar Rapids, Nebraska. And he went missing on June 8th, 1940. I mean, that is an old cold case, close to where I grew up in Podunk, Nebraska. Kearney man, Wayne Thompson, he went missing in 1976. Janet Callies went missing from Grand Island, Nebraska in 1978. John Brown went missing from Fullerton, Nebraska in 2008. Maria Guardo went missing from Lexington in 2008. Christopher Lupin, missing from Elm Creek, Nebraska, since 2019. And then there were so many more from the Lincoln, Omaha area that are either missing, and the majority of them are murdered. And that's what they're trying to get solved. And in my hometown of Marquette, Nebraska, actually, this happened right next door to the house that I grew up in, and no, it's not the same people that I live next to, there was a murder here just within the last year or so. Jeffrey Adams killed his wife, Angela Adams, and investigators have determined that the incident began with an argument during which Jeffrey Adams struck Angela multiple times. He then fled and then turned himself in, and since then, he has been found guilty of first-degree murder and is awaiting sentencing. And then, 2 months ago, just 2 months ago, a Marquette woman, she's going to face charges related to the death of a nearly four-month-old baby girl. Now, this just turns my stomach. 20-year-old Tiffany Cure is charged with felony child abuse resulting in death. A sheriff's deputy found the baby girl unresponsive at a home in Marquette on August 6th. An autopsy the next day revealed that the child had 2 skull fractures. Fuck me. The deputy also noticed that the home in which the baby was located smelled of urine and had piles of dog feces as well. How do you put that in your report? Oh, it smelled of piss and there was piles of shit everywhere. The maximum penalty for a conviction on child abuse resulting in a death is life in prison. They must have changed that. They must have changed that. Because I have mentioned my best friend more than once, and he had a tragic accident with his 2, 2.5-year-old. And the perpetrator ended up getting like 24 months. I mean, you know, and of course, all he'd have to do is just say, hey, Rob, we're going to go kick somebody's ass. Okay. Whose car are we taking? So that must have changed in the last, well, it would have been, oh gosh, almost 40 years. So, yeah. Some of the monsters of the Midwest, as I like to call them, specifically in Nebraska, here's just a smattering. I like that word, smattering. In the 1970s, a man by the name of Raymond Yellow Thunder, he was an Ogallala Lakota man born in Kyle, South Dakota, on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. He was killed by being beaten in Gordon, Nebraska. And if you guys don't know where Gordon, Nebraska is, I'm going to tell you what. One of my many ex-wives, she had family from there. That's the only fucking reason why I know where Gordon, Nebraska is. But it is up there in the middle. It ain't in the middle of nowhere, but you can sure see it from there. I'm just going to tell you. On February 12th, 1972, in a hate crime against Native Americans, his perpetrators, Les and Pat Hare, they were brothers, they were eventually convicted of manslaughter. Manslaughter. They beat this guy to death. Of manslaughter and sentenced to a whopping 6 years with a $500 fine. What the fuck? I just would love to see one of these fuckers. I don't give a shit if they're in their fucking 90s. They got fucking 6 years and manslaughter for beating a Native American to death. That is fucked. Another monster from the Midwest, Harold Lamont, Walkin' Willie is his nickname, Ote. Now, I'm old enough to remember when the Ote, I'm going to make a joke here, and it's not funny, but it is. Back in the day when Eddie Murphy would do the Little Rascals character, Buckwheat, he had the buckwheat hair up, and he'd go, Ote. And that's all I fucking remembered when Willie was going through his trial. Anyway, Willie Ote was convicted of the 1977 rape and murder of Jane McManus, a 26-year-old photography student in Omaha. In the early mornings of June 11th, 1977, he killed her. He was killed on death row. He was taken out by old Sparky. So in the 1980s, another one of note was a lady by the name of Connie Rena Koonsman. She was a professional basketball player who was a member of the Iowa Cornets and the Nebraska Wranglers in the Women's Professional Basketball League, the WBL. Didn't know that there was such a thing. From 1978 through 1981. Koonsman was killed February 7th, 1981, by a guy by the name of Lance Tibke, who later pleaded guilty to only second-degree murder. He was sentenced to 10 to 40 years in prison. What the fuck? But he was paroled after serving less than 9. My God. What the fuck? What the fuck? You have those types of criminals that were basically got a slap on the hand, And I know this is going to be probably a little more political than I normally get into, but you have people who have been convicted of buying weed that have had more time than that. That's fucked. That's fucked. John Joseph Joubert, he was a serial killer that was executed here in Nebraska. He was convicted of murdering three boys, one in Maine. On August 22nd, 1982, he killed a young man, not a young man, a little boy, 11 years old, Ricky Stetson, and two here in Nebraska. Danny Joe Eberly, 13 years old, he disappeared while delivering copies of the Omaha World Herald on Sunday, September 18th, 1983, in Bellevue, Nebraska. After a three-day search, Eberly's body was discovered in a patch of high grass along a gravel road. On December 9, 1983, Christopher Walden, age 12, disappeared in Papillion, Nebraska. That, by the way, for people that were not from Nebraska and don't know all of our little suburbs, Bellevue and Papillion are southern suburbs of Omaha. They found this little guy's body approximately 3 miles from where Eberly's body had been found. Now, before I move on to the 1990s, I want to tell you this freaked the fuck out of me, because still in 1983, I was still delivering the newspaper in the evening. I didn't do it for the Weird Herald. I did it for the dismal Grand Island Dismal Independent, but it was an evening paper. And I know you cannot even imagine in today's world of allowing your 13, 12, 10, 9-year-old to go out and do this unsupervised when we already know that there's fucking monsters out there. I don't remember which character it was. I think it was the Joker that said, we stopped looking under the bed for the monsters when we realized that they're all around us every day. Something to that effect. The 1990s. This was probably the most widely publicized case in Nebraska, was about Brandon Tina. This young person was a transgender man who was raped and then later along, meaning he was born with the girl parts, but he was transgendering to male, okay? He was raped. And I'm referring to him as he, because that's what he wanted before the end of his life. So out of respect for him and his family, that's the way I'm referring to Brandon. He was raped and later, along with Philip Devine and Lisa Lambert, murdered in Humboldt, Nebraska, by two douchebags by the name of John Lauder and Tom Nissen. His life and death were the subject of the films of the Brandon Tina story and Boys Don't Cry. I saw both. One of the things that really made my blood boil was when they were interviewing the law enforcement. I am not going to drop that guy's name, but he had this attitude that Brandon's murder was Brandon's fault. And when he was doing the interview for the movie, I also got a sense that he really wanted to say, well, he got what he deserved, or by being transgender, he brought it on himself. That infuriates me. I don't care what you do behind closed doors. I don't care how you identify. You want to identify as, I mean, you know, I'm self-proclaimed. I identify as Klingon. There you go. You ask any number of my ex-wives, I'm sure that they can identify me as a whole lot worse things than that. In the 2000s, we had a mass shooting. December 5th, 2007, 19-year-old Robert Hawkins shot and killed 8 people and wounded 4 others in Von Maur department store at the Westroads Mall in Omaha. I used to work at that mall, and yeah, I mean, it's a big mall. But he also committed suicide by shooting himself in the head. It was the deadliest mass murder in Nebraska's history since the rampage of Charles Starkweather in 1958. It is also the deadliest mass shooting in Nebraska's history. And it was senseless. Absolutely, any of these types of attacks, whether it be through bombing, gunfire, knives, it's senseless. This one here made a lot of headlines, and I have really dialed this one back. Maybe I will do a special on this young lady. On November 15th, 2017, a young lady by the name of Sydney Loof left work for a Tinder date, somebody she met on Tinder, in Wilbur, Nebraska. Wilbur is just this little spit in the road. The day after, Loof was reported missing after failing to appear for work at the local Menards. Here in Nebraska and other areas of the Midwest, Menards is like a Home Depot, okay, in Lincoln, Nebraska. 3 weeks later, search teams led by the FBI and local police departments, God, I'm so sorry, this is graphic, eventually found Sydney's severed remains on December 4th and 5th, containing body parts, sex toys, apparel, and other items, and they were all found inside many 30-gallon black trash bags alongside a gravel road north of Edgar, Nebraska, approximately 1 hour west of Wilbur. Part of Sydney's upper right arm still has never been found. Edgar, from where I live, I could drive there less than an hour. Aubrey Trail, 56, one of the perpetrators, along with his girlfriend at the time of Sydney's death, Bailey Boswell, was convicted of murder. The fucking Aubrey Trail. This piece of shit is such... Oh, my God. Anyway, let me finish reading this. In his trial, he jumped up and shouted that Bailey was innocent and then proceeded to cut his own throat with a razor blade that he smuggled out of the commissary or whatever the hell, however he got a fucking razor blade, but too bad he survived. And then the fucker somehow gets a 55-year-old woman, Samantha Alrekabi, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, and I'm sorry if I don't, an aspiring true crime author, to help him blackmail a former prison nurse out of $25,000 who had allegedly been, quote, and this is this article's, quote, manipulated into smuggling cell phone, chewing tobacco, and other forms of contraband, by trying to swindle her out of this by claiming a murder-for-hire plot against the nurse's husband. You know, turn this fucker loose out there into Gen Pop and let him know who he is and what he's done. When he fries, I'm not gonna shed a tear by any means. In 2020... there was a mass shooting that occurred at a Sonic drive-in in Bellevue, Nebraska, again, a suburb of Omaha. Two people were killed, two others were injured, and a 23-year-old man was arrested. Roberto Carlos Silva Jr. had also allegedly made a bomb threat to the location in March of that year. In 2022... the man pled guilty to all charges filed against him, including murder, attempted murder, and arson. So, you know, I just got to say, try to stay alert, because you never know if that Karen that's in the store that's flipping out on the retail person or the restaurant person because she ordered fries and she got onion rings and fries, she might be like one incident away from killing someone. Matter of fact, today I just saw a news story about a 77-year-old woman in Grand Island. She was sentenced for making threats against some kids. Now, I don't know what led up to this. I mean, these were teenagers. So we all know teenagers can be dicks. But she made threats against these kids with her car. I'm assuming she probably said, "You keep picking on my whoever it was, granddaughter, grandson, whatever," because she was defending a family member, "then I'm going to run you over with my car." So, you know, good for her defending, you know, and because I guarantee somebody did that shit to my grandkids. Fuck yeah, I'm in it. I'm going to end up, you know, going to court. I already know this. So just be careful, because you never know. You just never know. The guy next door who your dog doesn't like, you know, gives you these weird pedophile vibes or some shit. Just be aware. Just be aware of that and your surroundings. When we come back from our break, we're going to discuss some of the paranormal creatures. So stick around after these words from some of my fake sponsors.
Welcome to Boris's Weird, Strange, and Unusual Find. Located in the S&M Family Fun Center on Highway 4. If you're looking for a gift for a friend or even yourself that's just fucking odd, come on in. We have weird taxidermy, like turkey heads, stuffed gophers, and even two-headed creatures. Maybe you're more into shrunken heads or magic ritual voodoo dolls. And think of the fun you can have by gifting any number of the cursed items we have in stock, like the standard monkey paw, the cursed amulet, or the China doll, even a dagger. Come see me, Boris, at Boris's Weird, Strange, and Unusual Finds, located in the S&M Family Fun Center on Highway 4. Open from sundown to sunrise, 6 days a week.
Hey kids, it's your Uncle Blinky. As you know, we've just opened our newest location of Blinky's out at the S&M Family Fun Center on Highway 4. Come check out some of our newest toys, like the Dig Your Own Grave playset, the 50 Shades of Grey crayons, and the Cursed Amulet. Trust me, it's fine. Our grocery aisle has Lonely Man TV dinners, porn flakes, and Flaming Hot Cheeto Crunch cereal. Hit the men's department and get some Elon's Musk and smell like $1 billion. Blinky's is rated PG-13. Located at the S&M Family Fun Center on Highway 4, across the street from Knobs and Knockers and Dick's Liquor.
Any claims of time travel are purely fictitious and are only meant for entertainment purposes. And honestly, if you believe Rob can travel through time, I only have one question for you. What the hell is wrong with you?
All right, welcome back from that break. The black-eyed children, black-eyed kids, BEKs, have been tagged out there in the, I don't know, the internet world. And it's supposed to be paranormal creatures that resemble children between the ages of 6 and 16 with pale skin and black eyes, who are typically reported seen hitchhiking, begging, or encountered at doorsteps of residential homes. While tabloid coverage of these creatures has claimed that the tales of the black-eyed children have existed since the 1980s, most sources indicate that the legend originated from 1996 with the postings written by the Texas reporter Brian Bethel on a ghost-related mailing list relating to alleged encounters with, quote, black-eyed kids. Bethel describes the encounter of two of them in Abilene, Texas in 1996 and claims that a second person had a similar unrelated encounter in Portland, Oregon. Bethel's stories have become regarded as classic examples of creepypasta and gained such popularity that he published a FAQ just to keep up with demands for more information about the new urban legend. In 2012, Brian Bethel told his story on reality TV series Monsters and Mysteries in America. He wrote a follow-up article for the Abilene Reporter News describing his experience and maintaining his belief that it was legitimate. In 2012, also, the horror film Black Eyed Kids was produced with Kickstarter funding. Its director commenting that the, quote, creepy kids were an urban legend that had been floating around the internet for years now, and I always thought it was fascinating. In 2013, an episode of the MSN's Weekly Strange program that featured reports of black-eyed children is thought to have helped spread the legend on the internet. During one week in September of 2014, the British tabloid Daily Star ran three sensationalistic front-page stories about alleging sightings of the black-eyed children, connected to the sale of a, quote, supposed haunted pub. The paper claimed a shock rising in sightings around the world. Alleged sightings are taken serious by ghost hunters, and some of whom who believe black-eyed children to be extraterrestrials, vampires, or ghosts. The power of the internet to expand the reach of these creatures cannot be overstated. Historically, folklore and folk tradition has been passed on through generations by word of mouth and could even take years to spread from one country or continent to the other. But, of course, here in modern times, the World Wide Web functions as a global town square, the electronic equivalent of sharing stories by the fire. We know that they're not soulless children out there that are trying to kill us, right? I mean, the black-eyed kids are always trying to breach the border from the outside to the inside, from a public space with witnesses to a private, more solitary one. Their faces are typically obscured. Their eyes are unreadable. This particular urban legend seems to tap into something deeper. We are all genetically programmed to care for and protect the youngest of our species for survival. So, when they are portrayed as sinister and dangerous, it is deeply unsettling. The world of the black-eyed kids suggests that if you care for the children, they will kill you. And if you ignore them, they will haunt you. In short, from what I have found, whatever you do, do not let these little fuckers in. Tell them you cannot help them and that they need to go away. Now, let's talk about Slender Man. If you're not familiar with where Slender Man originated from, it's actually a fictional supernatural character that has originated as a creepypasta internet meme in 2009. He is typically depicted as thin, unnaturally tall, humanoid, with a featureless white head and face, and wearing a black suit. Stories of the Slender Man commonly feature his stalking, abducting, or traumatizing people, especially children. Slender Man has become a popular culture icon, although he is not confined to a single narrative, but appears in many disparate works of fiction, typically composed online. Early entries had consisted solely of photographs, sometimes with snippets of text, supposedly from the, quote, witnesses describing the abduction of the groups of children and giving him the character name the Slender Man. The quote under the first photograph read, "We don't want to go. We don't want to kill them, but its persistent silence and outstretched arms horrified and comforted us at the same time. 1983, photographer unknown, presumed dead. The quote under the second photograph read, "One of the two recovered photographs from the Sterling City Library blaze, notably being taken the day which 14 children vanished, and for what is referred to as the Slender Man. Deformities cited as film defects by officials. Fire at library occurred 1 week later. Actual photograph confiscated as evidence. Photographer Mary Thomas missing since June 13th, 1986. These additions effectively transformed the photographs into works of fiction. Subsequent posters expanded upon the character, adding their own visual or textual contributions. The creator was inspired primarily by a guy by the name of Zach Parsons, That Insidious Beasts, Stephen King's The Mist, and reports of the Shadow People, Mothman, and the Mad Gasser of Mattoon." I've been accused of being the Mad Gasser, but that's probably different. Other inspirations for the character for the Tall Man were from the 1979 Phantasm film by H.P. Lovecraft, and I'm going to tell you what, that creepy motherfucker still haunts my dreams. The surrealistic work of William S. Burroughs and the survival horror video game Silent Hill and Resident Evil. The creator's intention was to formulate something worse, something whose motivations can barely be comprehended and which caused unease and terror in the general population. In her book, Folklore, Horror Stories, and the Slender Man, The Development of an Internet Mythology, Professor Shira Chess of the University of Georgia connected the Slender Man to ancient folklore about fairies. Like fairies, the Slender Man is otherworldly with motives that are often difficult to grasp. Like fairies, his appearance is vague and often shifts to reflect what the viewer wants to see. And like fairies, the Slender Man lives in the woods and wild places to kidnap children. Should you encounter the Slender Man, to protect yourself and others, create distance. Put a distance between you and Slender Man by ducking around corners and running away for short distance. Then you can wait for him to disappear before continuing on your path. Avoid eye contact. Do not look at Slender Man for too long. The only way to beat Slender Man is to beat him with halogen lamps, so he's allergic to light. The Banshee, or Woman of the Fairy Mound, or Fairy Woman, is a female spirit in Irish folklore who heralds the death of a family member, usually by screaming, wailing, shrieking, or keening. Her name is connected with to the mythology, important tumuli, or mounds, that dot the Irish countryside, which are known as seed. Sometimes she has long streaming hair, where she can be seen combing it, with some legends specify she can only wail while combing her hair. She wears a gray cloak over a green dress, and her eyes are red from continually crying. She may be dressed in white with red hair and a ghastly complexion. The size of the Banshee is another physical feature that differs from region to region, though some accounts have her standing unnaturally tall. The majority of the tales describe her height as short in stature, anywhere between 1 to 4 foot tall. Wow, that is short. Her exceptional shortness often goes along with the description of her being an old woman, although it is to be intended to emphasize her state as a fairy creature. Sometimes the banshee assumes form of some sweet singing virgin of the family who died and has been given the mission by the invisible powers to become the harbinger of the coming doom to her mortal kindred. Or she may be seen at night as a shrouded woman crouching beneath the trees, laminating with a veiled face, or flying past in the moonlight, crying bitterly in the cry of, "This spirit is mournful beyond all other sounds on earth," and betokens certain death to some member of the family wherever it is heard in the silence of the night. In the Navajo culture, a skinwalker is a type of harmful witch who has the ability to turn into, possess, or disguise themselves as an animal. The term is never used for healers. The legend of the skinwalkers is not well understood outside of the Navajo culture, both due to reluctance to discuss the subject with outsiders, as well as what the Cherokee Nation academics say is a lack of the necessary cultural context the stories are embedded within. Traditional Navajo people are reluctant to reveal skinwalker lore to non-Navajos or to discuss it at all amongst they that they do not trust. Animals associated with witchcraft usually include tricksters, like the coyote. However, it may include other creatures, usually associated with death or bad omens. They might also possess living animals or people and walk around in their bodies. Skinwalkers may be male or female. The ability of a skinwalker includes shapeshifting. Skinwalkers can shapeshift into any animal in the world they know of, including humans. Skinwalkers are also telepathically linked with each other, enhancing their coordination during hunts and fights, but allowing little or no privacy at any time. Skinwalkers can also read other humans' minds and control them. Skinwalkers from two different groups can communicate telepathically and are able to choose which thoughts they share. In the Native American lore, skinwalkers can copy animal or human voices to lure victims for them to feed on. Well, that sucks. They generally copy the sound of a human that is in need of help. So, fellas, remember this. As you hear your wife calling for your help from the other room, "Honey, come help me," make sure it's her, because it could be a skinwalker, and that would be bad. Mind possession. In Native American lore, if human looks into the skinwalker's eyes, the skinwalker can control their mind and can magically steal their skin for their own usage. With magic, a skinwalker uses charms to control and kill their victims. There are only two ways known to kill or banish a skinwalker. Silver, like other shapeshifters, skinwalkers are vulnerable to and can only be killed by weapons made of silver, either a silver bullet or knife in its head or heart will kill it. Well, you know, if you think that Charlie is now a skinwalker, and you shoot him in the head with whether a lead or a silver bullet, and he's not, guess what? Gonna kill him. Sorry, Charlie. And you must create significant damage. Apparently they can die if a significant amount of damage has been caused by, guess what? Silver. The Wendigo is something that most people consider that it's also a skinwalker, but there is a difference. So what's the difference between the two? Skinwalker is a witch, And the Wendigo is said to be a malevolent spirit, which sometimes is depicted as a creature with human-like characteristics which can possess human beings. It is also said to cause its victims feeling of insatiable hunger, the desire to eat other humans, and the propensity to commit murder. In some representations, the Wendigo is described as a giant humanoid with a heart of ice, whose approach is signaled by a foul stench or sudden unseasonably chill in the air. Although descriptions can vary somewhat, common to all of these cultures in the view that the Wendigo is a malevolent, cannibalistic, supernatural being, they were strongly associated with winter, the north, coldness, famine, and starvation. So basically your normal winter here in Nebraska. The Wendigo is seen as the embodiment of gluttony, greed, and excess. Never satisfied after killing and consuming one person, they are consistently searching for new victims. A Wendigo need not lose the human's power of cognition or speech, and in some depictions may clearly communicate with its prospective victims or even threaten or taunt them. Fucking Wendigos. A specimen of a folk story in which a Wendigo also exhibits tool use, an ability to survive partial dismemberment, and auto-cannibalism. A shaman may be the only person who can subdue or destroy a Wendigo. A Wendigo can succumb to silver, going as far as saying that some effort silver weapons may be used to kill Wendigo through total mutilations. Well, okay. Again, let's talk about the Wendigo in the room. If you hack up someone because you think they're a Wendigo, and that still hacks them up, and you're using nothing but regular steel, could be a Wendigo, maybe not, I don't know. Silver stakes is the most gruesome method of killing a Wendigo, and that is to destroy its heart with a silver stake before dismembering it, or decapitation. And that will kill a Wendigo, supposedly. Dismembering and decapitation will also kill someone who's not a Wendigo. I am just playing a little devil's advocate there. And finally, as Wendigos are created by spirits of cold and hunger, they are repulsed by heat, especially fire, and they are extremely flammable and can be set ablaze in relatively minor flames. Okay, so the Shulu, and I know I'm mispronouncing that, I'm so sorry for that, is a fictional cosmic entity written by H.P. Lovecraft. It was introduced in his short story, The Call of the Shulu, in 1928, considered to be a great old one within the pathony of Lovecraftian cosmic entities. This creature has been since featured in numerous pop culture references. Lovecraft, man, I'm going to tell you what, that dude was on some serious fucking drugs. I don't know what the hell. Fucking LSD or some shit. My God. H.P. Lovecraft, man. Anyway, he depicts it as a gigantic entity worshipped by cultists in the shape of a green octopus and dragon and caricature of a human form. The Lovecraft-inspired universe, the Shulu mythos, where it exists and its fellow entities it's named after, a monster vaguely anthropoid, outline, but with an octopus-like head whose face has mass feelers, a scaly, rubbery-looking body, and prodigious claws on its hind and forefeet, and long and narrow wings behind it. Okay, or a pulpy, tentacled head surmounted by a grotesque, scaly body with rudimentary wings. Okay, so let me try to paint this picture in your head. When you've seen this, okay, first off, think about Davy Jones from Pirates of the Caribbean, the dude with the fucking octopus for the head, and he's got all these fucking tentacles hanging down, all right? Now, on that, he's got this, like, scaly dragon body, and then he's got, like, these fucking bat wings, like a demon. It's recommended to use ranged weapons and aim at the pupil where the eye charges at you. And you can predict its movement and throw a grenade underneath you. If you time it right, the grenade will explode when it touches the eye and you won't be harmed. Well, and I guess if you time it incorrectly, it's not going to matter at that point, right? Javelins are also used in the first phase because they deal good piercing damage. In the second phase, you can use Molotov cocktails to avoid self-injury and spiky balls. Okay, spiky balls. You know what comes to my mind? A guy who wasn't quite brave enough to shave his nutsack, but he did trim things. Spiky balls. Wow. Scatter around the arena. You can also try using guns like a mini shark, a boomstick, musket, or undertaker to hit the eye when it's spazzing around. This will damage the servants as they spawn and damage the eye of the Shulu itself. Damage over time is very helpful in either phase as the creature will often propel itself underground to get out of range. See, that's something I don't know enough about H.P. Lovecraft, except the fact that the dude was, like, super high all the fucking time and wrote about that shit. So bear with me on that. A succubus is a female-looking demon who appears in dreams or real life to seduce men, usually through sexual activities. According to religious tradition, a succubus needs semen to survive. Repeated sexual activity with a succubus will result in a bond being formed between the succubus and the man. And a succubus will drain or harm the man with whom she has been having intercourse. In modern representations, a succubus is often depicted as a beautiful seductress or enchantress rather than being a demonic or frightening creature. The male counterpart to a succubus is an incubus. The succubus is also known as the Earth Wanderer. In Jewish mythology, Lilith was the first wife of Adam, who then later became a succubus. She left Adam and refused to return to the Garden of Eden after she mated with the archangel Samael. In the Sahorastic Kabbalah, there were four succubi who mated with the archangel Samael. The original four queens of the demons were Lilith, Esheth, Zeunim, Agrit, Bat, Malat, and Namaha. Wow, those are difficult names to say. A succubus may take the form of a beautiful woman, but upon closer inspection may reveal the deformities in her body, such as bird-like claws or serpent-like tails. Folklore also describes men being forced to perform acts, that act of going downtown. In later folklore, a succubus took the form of a siren. Throughout history, priests and rabbis tried to curb the power of the succubi over humans. However, not all succubi were malevolent. Supposedly, Pope Sylvester II, from years 999 to 1003 was allegedly involved with a succubus named Meridian. I'll go with Meridian, who helped him achieve his high rank in the Catholic Church before his death. He confessed his sins and died repentant. According to the Kabbalah, the school of Rashba, the original three queens of the demons, Agrabah, Malat, Nama, Eshith, and Zeunium, all their cohorts give birth to children except Lilith. According to other legends, the children of Lilith are called Lilian. According to the Witch's Hammer, which is written by Heinrich Kramer in 1948, succubi collect semen from men they seduced. Incubi, or male demons, then use the semen to impregnate human females, thus explaining how demons could apparently sire children, despite the traditional belief that they were incapable of reproduction. Egyptian folklore belief, the Kirina is appeased by sacrificing an all-black animal to her. The animal is slaughtered without prayers. It is cooked without salt. No one speaks during the meal, and it is buried in the house of those it has afflicted. The physical weakness of the succubi can be killed through decapitation, heart extraction, as they can be killed by ripping their hearts from their chests, though only beings with immense strength can do that. Sexual need. Succubi are dependent on the sexual energy and life force of living beings to sustain themselves. The only known way to actually kill a succubus or incubus is make them fall in love with you and kill them after intercourse. Well, I guess you get to come and go at the same time. What a way to go. Thanks for joining me this week. I know this has been kind of weird, and next week's going to be even weirder. So come back and see us next week, and we will talk about similar things, but this time about haunted Nebraska. I'm going to give you some ideas on the little podunk areas that I grew up in.
This has been Generation Extraordinary. The views and opinions are Rob's and Rob's alone. Any claims of time travel are purely fictional. The music and audio clips are not Rob's or GXO's, and in most cases were downloaded through his paid YouTube subscription and are only used for entertainment purposes. GXO is a production of Pulpeye Enterprises. Its host, creator, producer, and editor is Robert Popp. Co-producer is Harley Quinn. If you are a fan of the show, please show your support by going on to Spotify and follow us, like and share. It seems like such a small thing to do, but it really does help. For more information, support, suggestions, or to contact us, go to the website www.genxord.com. Thanks for listening.